This is the Financial Side of Life podcast, episode 4.
Welcome to the Financial Side of Life podcast. Our mission, to empower you with smart financial strategies and show that it's possible to get a college education, save, invest, retire, or do whatever makes sense to help you live your best life. We'll meet amazing people and professionals who will share stories about how they do it, and together we hope to bring a little sanity to your complex financial life. And now, here is your host, certified financial planner pro and founder of Avea Financial Planning, Angie Ferbot-LaRossi.
Hey everybody, Angie Ferbot-LaRossi here, and I'm excited for today's interview because we're going to speak to a fellow certified financial planner pro and advisor who specializes in, guess what, working with doctors. And the reason I wanted to talk to him is that because he's dealing with doctors, naturally, the issue of student loans becomes a key part of planning for them. And I wanted to find out more and dig a little deeper into what's important to know if you plan to graduate from college with a lot of debt, like if you're going to be a doctor or an attorney. And, you know, from the experiences of those who have already done that, what can we learn so that new students are better prepared going in? So we'll learn a little bit more about that. My guest today is Ryan Inman. Ryan is the owner and chief planner at Physicians Wealth Services, a fee-only financial services firm in Las Vegas, Nevada. And we'll get to know him and his business a little more, but I'd just like to welcome Ryan to our program. Welcome, Ryan.
Angie, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Thank you. So, you know, my goal with talking to you today is to dig a lot into this whole concept of graduating with college with a lot of student debt and pretty much knowing that that's going to be the case going in. I know that you also are married to a physician. Is that right?
Yes.
And so you have your own personal kind of experiences with that whole thing, going through college and paying for college and paying off that debt, as well as the stories of your clients. So would you tell us just a little bit about your background, you know, where you're at today with your practice and what kinds of clients that you're dealing with? What are some of their situations?
Of course. Yeah. So my firm is Physician Wealth Services, and I am a fee-only planner that only works with young physicians. So think as they're coming out of training and kind of into the attending real world and having their first high paying job. Okay. That is kind of the transition that I specialize in. And my wife is a pediatric pulmonologist. We've been together since freshman year of college, where we met in the dorms. So it's been like, 14, 15 years, 5-year anniversaries this year. So Okay. Yes, if you can do the math, it took me 10 years to marry a doctor. I get made fun of all the time for that one. But basically our college experience individually was very different. I was very, very fortunate. My parents planned ahead. My grandparents planned ahead. Okay. And my grandma and grandpa had done these double E series bonds. Mm-hmm. That was, you know, at the time, they thought they were going to pay for all of college. They didn't anticipate, you know, back in the early 80s that college would be growing at 7% over inflation. And so they thought, you know, oh, we've got all this. But my mom and dad were also very kind of diligent and good planners. And they had saved a good amount of money for my brother and I to go to school. So along with a little bit of scholarships, basically my undergrad was paid for by grandparents and parents and a little scholarship. Okay. My wife, on the other hand, almost all of her tuition was covered through scholarships. She only had about $10,000 in loans that she had to take out in order to pay for undergrad. But that story was completely different when she decided to go to medical school. Mm-hmm. And so she, when she finished medical school, she wrapped the $10,000 of loans for undergrad in addition to the $120,000 that she had to borrow for medical school, which sounds like a lot, but that is actually really cheap for medical school. She did a really good job with living at home and not taking out a ton of money that traditionally med students take out to kind of live off of. Uh-huh. She was able to live at home and save some money, but she ultimately took about, when she consolidated everything, about $120,000, $130,000. And as you probably aware, there's a lot of different repayment options. And one of the programs out there is the Public Service Loan Forgiveness, which might go away in 2018, depending on what the Trump administration does. Mm-hmm. But essentially, we planned on her working at a 501c3, which is a nonprofit, and that after 120 payments or 10 years of working for one of those, that her entire balance remaining would be forgiven. And we did not really think further ahead going, if we decided to leave here, would that be an option wherever we might go? So we were in San Diego at the time. And when we said, let's stay in this program. And so she did fellowship residency for 3 years and fellowship for a few years. And then we decided, oh, we're going to move to Vegas because we had two kids and fellowship. There was no 501c3 positions here and she wasn't going to qualify. And we kind of knew that going in. So 5 years into the program, we ended up basically refinancing. And that balance, the reason why I tell this whole story is the balance went from about 125-ish thousand when she consolidated to about 180,000. And it's because we were kind of going along how public service loan forgiveness allows you to with paying minimum payments based on your income. And so we weren't even covering the full interest amount. Wow. And then interest gains interest. And so the balance kind of ballooned, and that's okay if you're going to stay in the program. But I really wish, looking back at all of this, we just decided to refinance and basically make the minimum payments, maybe on a 10-year repayment schedule or something, and then throw an extra money at it when we had it. So yeah, looking back, that's definitely a mistake I would have not liked to have made that ended up costing us some money, but.
What would you have done differently, you think, or could you have done differently?
I think it would have been more realistic to say, hey, you know, when you're finished training, right? We would have definitely, you know, consolidated and got into a repayment plan in residency, because in residency, you don't make that much money in relation to when you become an attending and you graduate and you finish training. But I think the best thing we could have done was be real with ourselves and just say, look, we shouldn't depend on this program. Realistically, we should just refinance, make the minimum payments, whatever that might be. Because during training, we were making like $200 payments on $130,000 loan a month. Like, it's very obvious, like that is not paying the interest on loan. Our payment should have been like $900. And I think we should have just refinanced there and paid the, you know, 900 equivalent a month. And then when she became an attending, then started pouring more money into just to get rid of the loans.
Okay. So now, you know, you're dealing with other people's situations, and what kind of stories or what kind of situations are you seeing frequently?
Well, I mean, the average client, I think that, so I only work with physicians, like 100%. Mm-hmm. I'm not one of those that says, oh, I specialize in something and then it's like 40% of my business, 100% DO or MD. And on average, I think my clients have about 280,000 in debt. And that's for a single, that's per household, I would say. Some of my clients are dual physician households, and I think the highest is around 850,000. For their medical school debt. That's obviously an anomaly, but I'd say on average, just under 300,000. And, you know, it's tough. Some people have kind of the ostrich mentality where they just shove their head in the sand and just say, I hope this works. And I definitely don't encourage or think that's a great option. And some of them, you know, start to research and start to understand it, but student loans are complex. There's a lot of different repayment options. There's a lot of different moving pieces. And especially when you start getting into more specialized things, like trying to figure out, do you qualify for public service loan forgiveness? And, you know, doing all the certification and then dealing just dealing with Fed loan servicing, which is a huge pain in the butt in itself. And they usually give out inaccurate info. It's really hard to kind of navigate the system. So I see a lot of frustration in my clients. And sometimes, and it's quite unfortunate, I see them, you know, delay having a family or delay buying a house or just general discomfort because they have $400,000 of debt and they make really healthy salaries, you know, 200 or 250 a year. But their debt load is just enormous, and they feel like they live paycheck to paycheck because their payments are now $5,000-$6,000 a month if they're not going for public service loan forgiveness. So it's tough to see, but it's something that, you know, with enough planning ahead, you know, you can get debt repayment plans together and you know, get on the right track, but it definitely makes you really think about, man, did I do this correct the whole time? And and I would encourage anyone to just think about it early. Don't delay.
So what causes your clients to pick up the phone and reach out to you, even just to begin with, typically?
Usually it's that pain point of, so the typical physician resident, let's just say that they're not going to do a fellowship. They make about $55,000 to $65,000, depending where they live in the United States. And this sounds like a decent salary, but when you think they're working like 80 plus hours a week, sleeping every fourth night at the hospital, they're making like pennies, you know, per hour. It's definitely, they're not being paid what they're worth, but the training, that's just kind of the thing that they go through, unfortunately. And when they end up getting a full-time position, let's say they finish residency and now they're becoming an attending and they're going to make $225,000, that big income boost has them a little worried, because now all of a sudden their loans become a big deal if they were going on income-based, or if they need to refinance. And usually it's a bunch of transition. We're talking about, you know, physicians in their early 30s. And so, you know, they're looking at having kids. They want to buy a house. They want to do all these things. And there's so much in movement. And physicians, they're notorious for not having any financial knowledge. They never took any courses, you know, in school or in high school, college, in medical school. There's nothing to teach them how to, you know, and I know it's old school, but like balance a checkbook, how to do a budget, you know, what are, you know, general basic financial principles. They're never taught these things. They take, you know, chemistry and other courses. So unfortunately that makes them targets in our field, which is horrible, but it's people are aware of that.
Sure.
So what causes them to kind of reach out is that, you know, transition period between all of these things. It's kind of like a perfect storm. And that generally is why they reach out.
So when you said that, you know, starting as early as possible. I've got two high school students now. One's a freshman and a junior. I don't think either of them is going to end up in the medical profession per se, but there are other kids at their school that that will, for sure. So when you say start as early as possible, what do you mean by that?
So let's say, let's just say one of your children was going to go, ultimately wanted to be a doctor and go to med school. They're going to get into college. And hopefully that, you know, there's been proper planning, or they're not going to take out significant student debt. And then they're going to go to medical school. And let's say they've got to take out a bunch of student debt just to get through med school. And what I mean early as possible is the best loan is the one you don't take out. So try to take as little as possible. And then when they finish med school, you're going to consolidate everything. And then really take notice, like as you're leaving medical school and starting residency, before things get crazy, understand how much in debt you took. What are your options? Go research, reach out to someone who can help you with that. There's lots of good resources available if you just spend a little time looking on Google, and find someone or yourself if you like that kind of thing. But take control of your loans like right away before things start to snowball. You know, if public service loan forgiveness is around, I doubt it will be by that time your kids would go through, but let's just say it was, like, is that the right option? And if it is, stick to it. Don't start and then 5 years later, like we did, refinance out. I really wish we would have just said, you know what, the probability of us doing this is probably 50-50. Let's not roll the dice. Let's just start paying it down. So as early as you can make the decisions on what you're going to do with your debt, the better. One of the things that I have trouble with clients is they go through college, medical school, residency, and they in some fellowship, some, you know, surgeons go much longer. They have even longer training periods, and they feel like they've sacrificed so much and they made so little that when they start making good money, their lifestyle is like a hockey stick. It's, you know, low, low, low. All of a sudden they make good money, and all of a sudden their expenses go up to match it. And that's a really tough thing. It's the lifestyle inflation, or the life, you know, this lifestyle creep. Mm-hmm. And, you know, taking your loans as an example and figuring out what kind of plan you're going to do with those things is the same thing you should be doing kind of with your overall lifestyle. Like, allow yourself to kind of have a little bit of increased lifestyle and satisfaction, but don't let it go crazy. You know, just have a plan, start early, pay attention to your finances in general. It's kind of what I'm referencing when I say start early.
Mm-hmm. So I've heard that, you know, as far as when, you know, because they've struggled and kind of scrimped for lots of years, and then there comes a point where the income goes up, that the spending tends to go up too, to kind of compensate for those years that they were saving or struggling and not having some of the things that they were working toward, wanting to, you know, enjoy the fruits of their labor. So when you're speaking to a client who might be experiencing this, I know it's probably a really difficult conversation to have. So how do you help them rein things in?
Well, moderation, mm-hmm. right? If they're reaching out to me right at the end of residency, mm-hmm. it's a lot easier to set the expectation. If they're reaching out to me 5 years later, hopefully they've got it out of their system. You know, I tend to be glass half full, and, you know, hopefully they got it out of their system and they're ready to make some changes. If they're just experiencing the hockey stick and trying to slow them down, saying, Hey, you know, let's keep moderation in mind. Let's not go crazy. Do this, but don't do this. It's a lot more difficult of a conversation to have. But, you know, I look at this, and this might be a crude way of saying it, but you're not paying me to be necessarily your friend. You're paying me to really help you. Mm-hmm. And the way that I can really help you is by giving you the best, honest, conflict-free advice that I can. You know, it's the benefit of us being fee-only planners. They know that we really have no conflicts of interest. We're not compensated by insurance companies or kickbacks on investments or, you know, any introductions we make. Like, what we're saying is what we truly feel is the best for them. And I stress that, and I say, look, I wish I could give you everything in the whole world and you just be as happy and content as you can. And at some point we will get there, right? If we go through kind of a life planning process and understand what's important to you, and we align your spending with that, and we've got kind of this path and we know where we're going, then everything that gets you down that path further, that makes you excited to get out of bed on Monday morning, it becomes a yes. And everything else becomes a no. And if we look at our spending like that, and that typically, you know, and there's a lot more conversation to that, but that typically helps clients understand that, hey, you know, if I just spend some time sitting down and reflecting and figuring out what I really do want out of life and how I really want my life to look, then what excites me, maybe it's, you know, going to a ball game in every, you know, MLB park, or, you know, maybe it's traveling and seeing all 50 states, like, those become yeses. That spending increase to those things is a yes. But that means that, you know, maybe I'm not spending, you know, an extra $2,000 going out to eat and to movies and shows and things like that that don't really excite me. So I try to help them find out what is that true passion, what is that ideal life look like to them, and those are the things that we'll say yes to. You know, so we don't have this crazy hockey stick. It's, you know, a gradual increase, and the things that they're saying no to can help fund and fuel savings or pay down debts and things like mm-hmm. that.
So because the debt management piece of it is such a big part of their overall current financial situation, are they finding it difficult to even look beyond that? You know, because a lot of what we do as planners tends to look towards retirement for one thing. But there's other things too that come up throughout life. Are they able to kind of look down the road and see a light at the end of the tunnel?
Sometimes. And I would say that really depends on the debt load. But there's differences right between planning. Doing all these retirement projections for a couple that is 55 and going to retire at 60 or 65 makes a whole lot more sense than doing all these retirement projections for someone who's 31 and has 30 years of, and they're just starting their career and they have 30 years of earning potential. That conversation isn't that much fun for them. They don't really relate to it. They don't really care. They know it's kind of out in the distance and they want to get there. The only time that those like retirement projections really come in hand is, you know, when the salaries are just so out of whack, you know, they make $1 million a year and they want to retire from medicine in 7 or 8 years, which I've seen that and that's awesome for them. But the typical person and physician I work with, that is not the case. And so just being realistic and saying, you know, okay, if your debt load is 400,000, you make 200,000, you know, what's the best repayment strategy? If they're going for public service loan forgiveness, like the best repayment strategy is like maximize all your tax advantage accounts and let that balance grow super high. And, you know, you start investing behind the scenes of on other things. If they're, you know, if their debt load is, you know, 600,000 or 500,000 and they make 200,000, it, you know, and you're not going for public service loan forgiveness, I question why you're not, in that sense. But, you know, and a lot has to do with, you know, how much money they're making in relation to their, into their debt load. So, you know, some clients come to me and they're like, we have 150,000 in debt, we make 300,000 and we're still really worried. And that, you know, just showing them kind of how we would prioritize it makes them feel better because not everyone can see the numbers as easily as others. My brain tends to think very number oriented. I'm not the most creative. On the other side, I can't, you know, I barely can draw a stick figure where they, you know, people can create masterpieces. So, you know, it's just, it's really, and I hate saying it because it's like a lot of our profession says it depends, but it really does. It depends on how much they're making versus how much their debt load is. And then, you know, is the debt load, even if it's small, is the debt load causing them pain? Like, is it something they always think about? Is it something that keeps them up at night? If that's the case, they're probably more risk averse. So we should probably prioritize and have a debt repayment plan accelerated than if they're like, nope, I don't really care. You know, I'd like to pay it off at some point before my kids go to college, but when, I don't really care. And I find the extremes pretty fascinating. Unfortunately, most physicians, they're kind of in that second camp where they're like debt immune. And they're like, well, just pile on more debt. Like, I've had it for 10 years. What does it matter if it's there for another 10? So that's actually more what I see rather than the first one. But I would say it really depends on the amount of debt that they have.
And then this is not the only debt that they have. So you talked about, you know, college for future current or future children, saving for that or saving for a little bit for retirement. How do you help people sort of prioritize where they might spend their next dollar or, you know, where they might save to?
So for residents, if they can get out of residency without consumer debt, like kudos, like that's amazing. If you can get out of residency without consumer debt and you've saved like in your 403B or in a Roth IRA and actually, even if you didn't max those out, like even better. When we look at it and say, okay, you came out of residency and you've got 30, 40,000 in credit card debt. You know, and let's say this is before they started working with me. They've got, you know, a couple hundred thousand in student debt and they just bought a house and they've got 400,000 in, you know, a mortgage debt because they took 100% financing on a doctor loan because the banks have these products for physicians that let them leverage even more 100% out. You know, we really look at it and go, okay, you know, what is the highest percentage of debt? We're going to really look to, can we consolidate, the credit card debt and come up with a quick repayment plan for that, prioritize it. It's really hard for any investment to make 20, 25%, which is what the interest is on the consumer debt. So we'll really prioritize that. And that's kind of an easy low hanging fruit one. And then when we look at it, otherwise, you know, let's say they maybe have a family loan and, you know, student debt and mortgage debt. We'll put together a plan that makes sense from maybe the highest interest rate or sometimes we'll look at like the debt snowball. You know, what are some little payments that you can make, eliminate those and then kind of keep accelerating if all the interest rates are pretty much in line with each other. So typically it's a combination of stuff, but really it's getting them, I'd say really the thing that we're trying to do is to build a good foundation, a financial foundation for them, and to show them like you can not only pay down debt, but you can also invest and max out these accounts for retirement. So we're going to do the right thing for later, and your future self is going to really give you a big hug and say good job. And then in your current self, you know, once you've put that money aside and you have some extra money, you know, how does that being allocated between, you know, student debt, you know, and mortgage debt or family debt or whatever it might be.
So are you finding that there are any like really strong themes that you keep coming up against with regard to working with clients like this who have a lot of debt? Do they keep make the same mistakes, or are there predatory type practices going on, or is there just you talked about they're not taught financial concepts anywhere in their career or their education? Are there kind of any of these continuing themes that you see again and again and again in your clients?
Yeah, the biggest one I see, and it really like makes me cringe, and like this is what really frustrates me, is someone else found them first and sold them a bunch of insurance, telling them it was a good investment, that they needed this product to, you know, carry out, you know, let's say a whole life policy. You know, they're selling them on this thing that, you know, you're going to, you know, be able to be paid out for life as long as you make these payments and things like that. Well, physicians, like, you don't need an insurance company to take care of you for life. You're a doctor. You're going to make a good income as long as you are diligent and don't overspend and spend every penny and live paycheck to paycheck. Like, you don't need products to take care of you for life. In fact, I have a really hard concept of even thinking of them, like, who would ever benefit from a whole life. Maybe there's a few rare examples that I could understand, but for the most part, I remember when my wife was in training, like, it felt like it was every month someone was there to wine and dine them, take them to Ruth Chris Steakhouse and, you know, give them a presentation or do a webinar on their services and how great this, you know, the things that they could do for them are. And a lot of it is scare tactics. Like, you need disability insurance before you leave training or you're never going to qualify for it again. Well, that's not correct. Yes, sometimes the, you know, getting it early in training costs, you know, saves them money, but it's not the only time they could ever get it. So a lot of the things that I see, the difficult planning pieces, are unwinding these things, and they walk around with like post-traumatic, you know, advisor syndrome. Like, they just got sold a bunch of stuff from an insurance guy that said he was an advisor, never did any planning, and the only time he reached out to them was to sell them more whole life or sell them additional insurance that they don't need. And that part's frustrating, and that I see that way too common. And it's, you know, it's like heartbreaking to see that this is money they could have been paying down debt with, or they could have been putting in a Roth IRA before they hit the phase outs. You know, it's just so frustrating to see that. So it's the reason why I started my podcast, Financial Residency, to hopefully get basically this message out. You know, I tend to look at it as, you know, I go a foot deep and a mile long, and in the knowledge that I'm giving, I don't go crazy in depth with stuff. I just want to blast out as much information as I can, so physicians don't get, you know, residents and medical students, they don't get bombarded with, you know, this is what you should do, and this is the scare and the, you know, the tactics that they're, you know, these guys and gals are trying to sell, and that they are more armed to protect themselves and their finances.
Are there any other pitfalls that you come up against like that, or is that kind of that big one?
That's pretty much the biggest one. The other one probably is the student debt. Most people, you know, the doctors are really busy, and during training, they're treated so poorly, and their hours are just so crazy. I mean, I literally every fourth night, like, I knew my wife was gone, and she's my fiance at the time, or I guess girlfriend, then fiance, and then wife. So I've seen it kind of again all across the board here, but it still stays true. Every fourth night, she was gone. And then when she was home, she's still getting paged and wasn't, you know, she couldn't have a glass of wine at dinner because she might have to go in. You know, it's mm-hmm. a tough thing. And, you know, the last thing they want to do is go, oh, finally a day off. Let me go dig into my student debt and see like how much I'm in debt for, you know, getting treated so quote unquote well. So they tend to look at it and just go, screw it. I can't deal with this right now. Like I'll put this on the back burner. And if they're in, you know, if they're not married and don't have a spouse, like it really does kind of stick in the, you know, with them. They can't offload it to anyone else. And they typically have problems with their student debt. They didn't take care of it early. They didn't pay attention early. And, you know, the person that's going to pay attention to your finances the most, regardless if my intentions are absolutely the best they can, I'm sure Angie, yours are as well, but no one is going to know more and pay attention more to your finances than you. So starting early, you know, having a plan early and understanding, you know, how much debt you're taking out, why you're taking it out, how you're going to end up paying this back. I really wish, you know, kids going through college would say, look, I'm going to go to this college and it's going to cost me $50,000 a year, but the job I'm going to get coming out is going to pay $35,000 or $45,000. That's probably not either the best industry for you to go into or the best college for you to go to. If it's going to cost that much, I mean, it's going to take you forever to pay it back. Is there a cheaper college that you could go to get pretty much the same amount of knowledge and experience? I mean, college, and I'll be real, college isn't all about, you know, the books. Like there is experiences and things. I understand that. And I wish that for my kids that they can experience all of that. But is there another college that maybe costs half that amount that you're still going to get a really good degree from, that you're going to come out with half the amount of debt and still go to that $35,000, $45,000, $50,000 job, but you're not going to be burdened for 25 years with student debt? You know, I would encourage people to think more long term rather than this is the college I have to go to because it's the best. You know, I don't know. Maybe I'm a little biased, but I look at it and say, you know, if you could go to a college that's half the cost and you're still going to get some really good education, you know, why is that so much different than another one? Now, growing up in Southern California, UCLA and USC were very big rivals and they were everywhere. And a lot of the people that lived around me or my friends' parents, they went to those colleges and they have insane alumni networks. And I could understand maybe paying a little bit more for college or going to a little bit better college if the alumni network is crazy. I've literally sat in many meetings prior to me starting my own firm where the, you know, potential client is sitting there and, you know, my boss is sitting there and they're chatting. All of a sudden one says, oh, I went to USC. Oh, you did? So did I. And then all of a sudden no business has talked and they're chatting about their experience at USC. Everyone walks away, handshake, and business is done. If you're hyper local and that's where you want to stay and that alumni network is that strong, it might be worth it in the long run to pay a little more money. But if the college you're looking at is, you know, back east and you're a West Coast person or vice versa, and you know you're going to move back to the West Coast, that alumni network isn't going to extend out and it costs a whole lot of money, like maybe there's other options. You know, so from a big picture, just understanding, like when you go to college, you know, think bigger picture, you know, what would your end job look like 2, 5, 10 years out of college? How much does that pay? And, you know, and kind of compare it to the costs of college. And hopefully college doesn't keep growing at 6% over inflation or 7% over inflation, because this is
it's not sustainable
at all.
Seems to be slowing down in our state just a little bit. We've made some changes in Washington last few years, so it does seem to be slowing down.
I sure hope so. I mean, my wife and I both went to the University of San Diego. It's an amazing school in San Diego. We absolutely loved it. I would love for my kids to go there. But when my wife and I went there, it was about $20,000 a year, $22,000 a year. I just looked at it maybe a few months ago, and it was like $40,000 a year. And I'm like, man, we didn't graduate that long. I mean, I know I'm getting older, but man, like, that's crazy. And then I extrapolated out and said, okay, well, at the time my son was 2. So it was probably like maybe September. I was looking at this because his birthday's in September. He was just turning 3. And I said, okay, you know, 16 years from now, when he goes to school, and I just kind of put the math together and was looking at it, how it's grown over the past 15 years And I was just, again, doing this school, so it's not every school. I was literally just looking at USD and said how it's grown over the past 15 years and how it's going to grow over the next 16 if it remains consistent. What's it going to cost for my son Wyatt to go to school? And it ended up being for a four-year school, if it grows the same way, $600,000. And to put that into perspective, if I started a 529 plan right now, which I have for him, but if I started one right now, I'd have to put $1,000 a month and have it invested in 100% stock and hope that I don't have a horrible sequence of returns at the end, basically in order for him to just go to undergrad. And that is just, that's just crazy. So I'm really hoping that college tuition comes in check.
Well, that's one of the, goals of this podcast is to help people anticipate planning for those eventualities, not knowing what the future holds as far as college tuition costs and so on, but knowing what you can control is your side of things and how to be a smarter consumer as far as purchasing college education. So mm-hmm. Ryan, we're kind of coming to the end of our time here together. I like to wrap up by asking a question that just, looks back. We've talked about a lot of different things today, but if you could give maybe one key piece of advice to listeners on our topic today, primarily with, either planning to go into the medical field and knowing that you're going to have this potential large debt as you come out, is there any one key piece of advice that you might be able to give?
I would really say, and let's just say that they're high school age and they go, I really want to become a doctor. And that's their ultimate goal. I would look for a college that isn't astronomical, but has a good track record of those leaving there to get into medical school. And I would say, I would try to maybe even do some credits beforehand. AP classes or community college to make it even cheaper, because those credits are significantly cheaper than when you go to an actual like four-year university. I would look for basically like a decent college that doesn't cost, you don't have to go to the most prestigious, amazing college. And in the same token, like you don't have to go to the most amazing, prestigious medical school either. Like if you're going to get trained, I wouldn't go to like, and I say, with quotes, like bottom of the barrel medical school, but I would try to target the mid tier, like those medical schools that are good programs and they're affordable. And this might be in the Midwest. This might be, down south. It might not be in the area that you live in, but I would try to find colleges that, have really good track records, and medical schools that have really good track records, but don't cost a ton to go to. That would be kind of my thing, is to really kind of plan ahead and say, if this is the track I want to go to, what colleges have high acceptance rates to medical schools, through their various, science programs. And then, what are the costs of going through these programs, and try to weigh it out. And you might be spending a ton of time doing research, but when you finish training, you're going to have significantly less debt than someone who didn't actually plan this. And they went to a really nice, undergraduate program. And then they maybe went to, they were a foreign medical grad and down in the Bahamas, or they went to, University of Virginia, and it's crazy $60,000 med school or something like that. Like I would really look at the costs up front in today's dollars and say, what are my best options for kind of the middle to upper tier, but not paying upper tier pricing.
Okay. Excellent. Excellent advice. So, Ryan, I really appreciate you spending time with us today in the podcast booth, and I want to thank you for sharing your story and the stories of your clients, your experiences, to help our listeners who, might have that possibility of going into the medical field or might be graduating with a lot of debt at the end. So we appreciate all the ideas and the feedback and the tips. Want to say thank you. Thank you for joining us.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me on. And if there is any, medical students or future medical students out there that want to have a little bit more education specifically around, medical school and finances and residency and things like that, My show is called Financial Residency. It's free, just like Angie's. You know, go find me on iTunes or Google Play or Spotify or iHeartRadio. I'm on all of them. And yeah, feel free to ask questions too.
Financialresidency.com? Is it a website?
Financial Residency. Yeah, financialresidency.com. And then is where kind of the show notes and a lot of the podcasts are kind of, that's like the show notes page. But you can go search in anywhere that you listen to podcasts, any app that you listen to podcasts.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for sharing your wide, vast knowledge with us today. Appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me on.
I want to thank Ryan for stopping by the podcast booth and sharing his stories with us today. And thank you for listening to today's program. Be sure to check over the show notes for details from our conversation. And I'd like to invite you to listen again and subscribe to our podcast at aveafp.com. That's AVEAF like financial, P like planning.com. And leave a review. And please join our exclusive podcast community on Facebook at Financial Side of Life. Thank you for tuning in.